welcome to OMAC London Night Hockey here on Rogers TV. I'm Paige Martin, and tonight here at Budweiser Gardens, it is game one of the Western Conference semifinal series between the London Knights and the Guelph Storm.
R wins the draw, tab back to Samarukov, knocked down Bouchard, now 3-on-2 developing, now Bouchard, and across the line, here goes Foodie shooting! He scores! London would love to go up by two, here's Nelson on the penalty shot, shoots! London moving the puck around pretty good, 4-on-10, Bouchard, Wake shoots, scores! Near side, Samarukov shoots, Farmington whacks out, that'll do it, game on, in the book, London will win. Bouchard will start out for the London Knights, he'll gift one on the blade of Foodie, stops, back to Bouchard, then it goes up, out through to center yet again, little dish, Guskov, charges hard to that, Guskov shoots! Now here Foodie on the fly again, trying to go wide, Foodie! 3-0, the Knights lead it. See if Guelph can come back now. Broken up again by Speed. Nelson waltzing his way in. Shoots the score! Almost another London goal. He tried to feed it for Hancock. Here's Hancock! And Bouchard has the puck for London. Boquist shoots the score! Bouchard! London will continue on the power play. Here is Dunkley in for McMichael. Return feed. The shot! In game two, records the shutout as the London Knights beat the Guelph Storm by the score of 7-2. Game three tomorrow night in Guelph.
Here's Farmington. Nice drop pass for Bouchard. Worked across, Boquist scores! Adam Boquist opens the scoring power play goal and finds Joey Keane with the puck. Fed across, Foodie! Quick goal! Liam Foodie responds to make it 2-1, London Knights. To Hancock, back to Bouchard, one-timer, knocked down, rebound, scores, Kevin Hancock, a power play goal, and a beauty it was to make it 3-1 London Knights. Back into Timken behind the net, trying to set things up, he'll work back to the point, Lahead shot, scores, what a blast, as Lahead makes it 4-2. Bouchard, nice moves, Bouchard scores, what a goal, Evan Bouchard, my goodness. Pass, McMichael getting away from Suzuki. Drink wide, Turco. Now Guskov scores! What a shot by Matvey Guskov as he makes it 6-3. Picked off, here's Bouchard rushing in there. Bouchard looking for Engel, scores! Evan Bouchard, his second of the game. It's 7-4 London Knights. That'll do it, it doesn't matter. It's a 7-4 London Knights victory as they take a commanding stranglehold 3-0 series lead over the Guelph Storm. So I'm trying to set something up here. Here's Suzuki centering in front, scores! Dave Schnarr bangs it home, power play goal! And whistle back out to Suzuki. Swept across to Lalonde, back, return feed to Suzuki, low shot, scores! Nick Suzuki, 3-1 Guelph! And here's Gogolev trying to catch a break on that left wing side. Spinning back, gives it to Howell. He can't get past. And he does, it scores! Leon Howell! The Guelph Storm, a 4-3 winner to get their first win in this series to make it 3-1. And game five heads back to London.
He will just send it in hard. Played over on the far side, kept in by Dursey. Pinball against the goal! Scores! Caviezel onto the blade. And a very important first goal for the Guelph Storm. Bouchard in front of the net, broken up by Radcliffe, and he'll set it free, and Suzuki will salt this one away, and the Guelph Storm will win this hockey game with 12 seconds remaining, and back to Guelph it'll go for Saturday night.
Not many believe Game 6 will be possible after going down 3-0 in this series, but let's be honest, London's still in the driver's seat here, a win and they move on, but perhaps, just perhaps, the Storm has planted that seed of doubt.
And whistle behind the net. Trying to center in front, he does. Right up, it scores. Nice backhand, it is Isaac Radcliffe. Both accounts, and there's a shot, scores. Jersey in front. The Storm have the lead 3-2.
Lalonde ahead for Camiso.
Looking across for Kovalev. His shot scores! There it is, 4-2. Wellstorp come all the way back from 3-0 to tie this series at 3 and force a Game 7 Tuesday night in London.
Tonight here at Budweiser Gardens, it is Game 7. You can feel it in the atmosphere that something is a little bit more intense here.
Here's Sturzy. Takes a peek, trying to find a man, scores! And Suzuki puts the Wellstorm within the... As Cotter, not as good at the faceoffs as Moskal. Cotter leans in on the draw against Suzuki, wins it again. There's a shot, they score! And there you have it! Good play, Radcliffe in front! Shot, score! And whistle! And it's 5-3 goal. The net is empty for Wolf. Out through to center, who else but Suzuki chips a pre-ent whistle past one man. This might solve it away.
15 seconds remaining. We'll have hockey for you Thursday night from Saginaw. Radcliffe with it. Now Radcliffe will drop it back. The Storm become the fifth team in the Ontario Hockey League to come back from a 3-0 deficit. This one is over. The Storm win 6-3 and win the series in 7.
Woo! Yes! Yes, I don't care what number episode. I don't care what number episode this is.
Oh my god. Congratulations.
Oh, yes. Oh, this is so sweet.
Sweeter than 2014?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to top a championship, but this...
You at least swept them.
Yeah, like, this is pretty awesome.
Welcome to the club, buddy.
Oh, down 3-0. Last week's episode, Tony and I were like eulogizing the Storm season and what went wrong and everything.
And it was so nice.
You were liking it. Oh, yeah, but
Steve,
come on.
I'm going to say this once and once only. I want to hear about the Guelph Storm.
You do, eh?
No.
Oh, you don't, but...
Man. I'm happy, man. Thank you for knocking out a one seed.
Yes. A one seed to boot. A number one London. That was pretty awesome. I got to say, man, that week of games, those four games, man, I went into game four so down because, you know, there's a chance that I don't have season tickets next year through of, you know, life, and I'll get to that in this, you know, eventually. But... thinking, man, this could be my last game of season tickets at home. And thinking, you know what, we might win this game, but we're not. If we do, we're not winning game 5. And Guelph pulled out game 4 by, like, you know, the hair on their ass, basically. They got a one goal win, a 4-3 win, and it was like, yeah, they won, but it's, they didn't exactly blow London away. And I, you know, you figure it's not going to be anything that crazy, but they did it again in Game 5. And once they won Game 5, it's one of those, like, you know what? They might have an outside chance at this. And then, of course, Game 6 was pretty just nuts. That was the loudest I'd heard the Sleeman Center since they won the OHL title.
You think?
Yeah. Well, easily the biggest game they had played there since then. And then, of course,
Top prospects.
Top prospects. Game 7, yeah, went down. I was nervous as hell. The first time I had gotten nerves for a game since the Memorial Cup final. And, you know, Guelph got that goal late in the first period to make it 1-0. And it didn't help my nerves that much. But London came out in the second period. They got those 3 goals in the span of 3 minutes. And it was a lot like Game 2 was, where Guelph was down 2-0 after 2. London came out, scored like 5 goals in 5 minutes. And it wasn't, none of them were really the fault of you know, Popovich or anything. It was just London came out and scored 3, and it was just like, yep, alright, this seems like the end. I don't
and then
think
the refs fucked London.
I don't know about that. Well, Guelph did get a power play goal pretty quickly to make it 3-2. And
it was a tying goal, man. Yeah. Going through that freaking crazy ass intro, and it's like, wait a minute, Formanton changed. What the fuck is this?
No, it was Billy Moskal.
Moskal, yeah. And yeah. I'm like, he got off the ice in time. And that was the weakest fucking icing call I've ever seen in my life. I don't think I have to say that I hate London, you know, fuck them and everything. But at the same time, damn, dude, call the game right.
Yeah, that, like, Sam Marukov, like, took, like, the longest way he could to get to that puck. And
he stopped.
Yeah.
And they still called it icing. Like, yeah. It didn't matter. You won by 3 or 4 or whatever.
3.
But, yeah, but fuck, that was weak. That kind of took the air out of London right there. They're used to having the refs on their side.
Womp, womp. Isaac Ratcliffe picked the best time to finally show up in the series. He had not, you know, 50-goal guy this season, and he had not been that good in this series. He scored his first goal of the series. He got the opening goal of Game 6. But there were times throughout the first two periods of this Game 7. I remember at one point after Guelph had made it 3-2, and Ratcliffe and Suzuki had a 2-on-1, and Suzuki had the puck, and he had a lane to shoot. It wasn't like his only option was pass. And Suzuki's been so hot, it was like, shoot it, shoot it. And he passed it to Ratcliffe and just went, like, right through Ratcliffe. And it's just like, man, what the hell is happening with this guy who been scoring like crazy all year? Man, did he ever come through in the clutch. That you know, the goal you were talking about, the tying goal, where Suzuki snapped it to him on the face-off, and he ripped one, and then I think it was less than a minute later that Durzi gave him that amazing cross ice pass to get the go ahead goal. And man, I, you know what, I was probably more jacked after Game 6. This one, it was more like, it was just like disbelief, like, holy shit, they actually did it. Like, I couldn't believe it. It's just insane. Even now, you know, a day later, I still almost can't believe it. It hasn't fully sunk in, I don't think. So, and then it's just like, oh, yeah, and now you've got one day off before you got to play Saginaw. So
that's what happened to us when we came back from 3-0 down to Kitchener. We had to go right to Barrie for the OHL Finals like a day and a half later.
Yeah. So.
And we won.
Yes, you did. And that's the thing, people, you know, I foresee two things are happening as I guess we kind of slide into this Western Conference preview kind
that's
of.
That's it? That's yeah. All you got?
No. I was just going to.
You came back down from 3-0 to beat the fucking London Knights. All you got?
Here's some other things. You know what? The London Knights fans, super gracious about it in the building last night. Sorry?
God. now we're making up and being friendly and shit.
I'm thinking that the fans who would have been shitty about it, when Guelph got that super early empty net goal, like Hunter pulled the goalie with over 4.5 minutes left in a 4-on-4 situation, and Guelph got the empty netter within, I think, like 20 or 30 seconds of the goalie being pulled. And once that goal went in, half the building got up and left. So,
Hunters.
Yeah, apparently that was the thing.
God, if there is nothing that screams sports talk radio needs something to talk about, then should the coaches talk to the players after? Yeah. Fuck off! You're not going to even remember that 2 days from now.
I honestly did not care that much, and you know what? It's not like the buzzer sounded and Hunter like ran off the ice and his coaching staff. Like, they did go and shake the Storm coaching staff's
hands.
Which
is what they're obligated to do.
Yeah. They did that, and then they left. And, you know, would it be nice if they shook the players' hands, I guess? But
they gotta go to the farm, man.
Do the Storm players even give a shit?
No!
Exactly! So... You know,
Thanos has been vanquished.
Yeah. Add insult to injury for London. Of course, you know, Ratcliffe and Suzuki are both London natives. They both played for the London Junior Knights. The Ratcliffes, from what I was told, they were the ones that bought a box right in behind the London net, and they invited all the Storm parents and billets to the games in London. This wasn't the first game they'd done it for. So most of the crowd noise you hear are from them. The you know, there were other Storm fans spread throughout the building, but they were all together, and God had to have been like at least like 60 of them in there. And from what I was told, somebody, I don't know if it was a parent or a billet or whatever, but somebody in that box won the 50-50 of over $15,000 to boot. So
nice.
Pretty good night for all involved, I guess. But just insane. I easily a top five, top three moment probably in my OHL fandom. I mean, like I said, it's hard to top a championship, right? Like, you know, it at the end of the day, it is round two. They're only halfway there, but that is just, that's sweet. Like, there's nothing else you can say, right? Like, of all teams they could do it against, and they looked awful in the first. It wasn't like London won a bunch of really close games. Game one was actually close, but London kicked their ass, you know, in games two and three, and Guelph looked like they had nothing. And the first three wins that Guelph got were all, you know, essentially one goal games. They had empty netters in games five and six, but they were essentially one goal games. So last night's was the one that was kind of the biggest gap. But man,
all right, done.
Yeah,
done.
I can go all day.
I tolerate all games. We got to speed round this thing because we got three other series that weren't done by the time we finished. Let's start with Saginaw. What the fuck took you so long to take out the Sioux, man?
Yeah, the Sioux was pulling a Guelph there for a minute, and
oh my God, it's been a day. We've done it twice. Don't call it a Guelph.
Okay, they were pulling a Windsor. How about that?
Thank you.
Okay, they were pulling. It's just because Guelph and them were doing
it
at the same time. Yeah.
Saginaw actually made a third round, though.
Woohoo! Good on them.
They did something.
I'm super happy for them.
The team that's never done anything did something.
Yeah. It's like Kingston getting the third round last year. Just like, hey. Except they actually probably have a better shot this time. Saginaw does, I think. But yeah, congrats to them.
This is that reverse psychology bullshit.
Saginaw.
It is. Aw, I like when Steve gets into abnormal playoff mode.
Saginaw, again, they had a couple of just ass kickings of the Sioux in the first couple of games. Like, there was a 10-1 game in there. There was like a 7. Wasn't game one like 7-3? Something like that. Like, and then all of a sudden, just they couldn't put the Sioux away, but, you know, they finally did it on the road. It turned into the what I was calling the FU series, the fingers all around in game, I think it was 5, down in Saginaw. Fans giving fingers, Sioux players giving fingers, suspensions. Fun stuff. They are division rivals, so.
And Ottawa finally knocked out Sudbury, which, damn it, I want Sudbury to go far. But I'm happy for Mikey.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, I think we had talked about it. That was at 3-0, I think, at our last episode. And good on Sudbury, I mean, in the sense of it kind of went 5 because they played a triple overtime game. 5th longest game in OHL history and longest for each of those franchises. But Ottawa gets the win in that one on the road, so they get to rest up. You know, a triple overtime game, you need to rest up after one of those. And they watched Niagara and Oshawa kick the crap out of each other. But, you know, yeah, it kind of sucks for Sudbury. They had a decent team this year, but I think, again, everyone was like, it was the goaltending. And as good as Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen was, he couldn't overcome Ottawa. And Ottawa put up some big numbers against him in the first few games. You know, him and DiPietro had a duel in game 4, obviously, but, you know, and I don't think it was so much DiPietro out goaltending Luukkonen. It was more so just Ottawa being a better team, you know?
Oh, no, totally. And from the times I've been watching most of the Western Conference stuff, shocker, but no, when I saw Sudbury out there, they weren't the same team you saw in the first round where they were just like guns a-blazing. They got their licks in, but fuck, that's a strong Ottawa team this year, man. Like a
it
really,
is.
Really strong Ottawa team.
It is.
And we got another upset.
Yeah.
It's an upset.
That's totally an upset. And I personally, and obviously I'm biased, but I would call this one more of an upset than Guelph beating London, in the sense of, if you said going into round two that Guelph was going to beat London, I don't think too many people would be shocked by that. You know what I mean? If you told people that Niagara was going out in round two this year. Wow. Like, they, you know, this is one of those real big disappointments for them. They went all in this year. They don't have, like Kingston last year, they do not have draft picks for, like, second rounders, I think, until, like, 2026 now or something. They are kind of screwed in that regard. They
won- the salt in the wound? They lost to the team they traded all their players with.
Yeah, like, of all teams they could lose to. And there are years where, like, you trade away players to a team. Like sometimes you're, like, that eighth seed, right? You trade away two big guys to someone within your conference, and it just so happens you face them in the first round, they kick your ass. But those are situations where you know the deal going in, right? Like, it's this was supposed to be a deal where Niagara is supposed to win this, and this is not a discredit to Oshawa. And I know we've ripped on Oshawa fans a lot, but Oshawa, the team themselves, I have no problem with, and they've got a pretty solid team this year. And it's one of those, a good team was going to have to go out in round two here, but at the end of the day, Niagara was the favorite. And I picked this series to go seven games. You know, it's not like I was saying Niagara was going to steamroll them. And I thought that was because Niagara just had their inconsistencies this year, right? And they won game one in overtime, and then they had a pretty decisive win over Oshawa in game two. But, you know, Oshawa held serve at home, and they managed to steal one in Niagara, and they win four straight. And it just, I don't know. By the end of it, from what I heard, I did not actually see any of those games other than, there was a couple nights I was watching three games at once. So I never had my full focus on their games. But
if you or others suffer from OHL playoff, please consult a doctor.
I'm just saying, you know, I had seen so many Niagara people talking about how Niagara took so many stupid penalties. A couple players on their team in particular, but you know, how smug would you be if you're an Oshawa fan now? It's like, hey, thanks.
Oh,
thanks for the picks and the amazing young prospect who was a factor in this series, and we beat
you. I'd be
too
smug too, but they don't need to be any more smug, man.
That's true. Randy Marsh driving around his electric car. Hey, Oshawa, I see you have five Memorial Cups. Thanks. Three of them are from a different franchise, though. Thanks. Anyway,
It's ice repainting time, though, bud.
It is. The Saginaw's already been posting their videos of it. I think Ottawa did, but Saginaw's the one I've seen. And
Saginaw or Ottawa has too.
Yeah. though someone pointed out, it's like it's not just how they put the, you know, Wayne Gretzky trophy or Bobby Orr trophy on the ice now. It's not just that, but they're putting on, like, in Saginaw, they have to put, like, CIBC on the ice and Real Canadian Superstore and all this stuff. It's just like, oh,
well,
yeah.
In fairness, they have, maybe CIBC is, like, the one bank that never, well, a lot of the Canadian banks are in the States.
Yeah, like, even, like, BMO's down there now, like, TD, I know TD's been
they'll
down
figure out what a Roger is. Eventually,
yeah. I think we had
who's this Roger? Why is he running all this?
Yeah, I think we had that same conversation when Erie was in the finals, but yeah. So you know, it's the logos that you can see from space that I joke about every year. Just they're giant, but hey, it's a big deal that you get this far. You know, your reward for making it to the final is you get that sweet, sweet Memorial Cup patch on your jersey. Your reward for getting this far is check out, you get new ice logos, I guess. I don't know. Also, full team introductions in games one and three. So
the only bummer about this is the fucking Holy Week, so the schedules are really clumped together. I always bitch about the schedule. This time it's not the OHL's fault. They can't have games on Good Friday because, you know, Christ died Parsons or something. But
his house burned down.
Why are we playing two games on Thursdays, two games on Saturday, and then Oshawa's like, yeah, Easter Sunday, what the fuck?
It's their really? Night. It's their night. Because Easter Sunday, for whatever reason, it's not, like, as big of a deal as Good Friday. Like, Good Friday is the day you actually get off work and get paid for.
Oh, I get it, man, but it's like game 6 and 7 for both these series are the Sunday-Monday. Game 5 is both the Friday. Game 4 is both the Wednesday.
And game 7's
4 through 7, man, all on the same days?
Yeah, it's weird. And game 7's are always planned for the Tuesdays, but in this round, it's the Mondays.
If the OHL could freaking schedule the OHL Championship Series and then have just another OHL Series that doesn't mean anything play alongside it, they would.
Play for like, third.
Like, God, I want to watch both series. Why aren't we staggering every other day? And if it's their normal home date or not, who gives a fuck? We're in late April. It's chaos time.
Yeah, I've, you know, once we beat Kitchener, we knew in Guelph, no more Friday games for us. So, Monday, Wednesdays, woo! But we do get a Sunday afternoon game in this series.
And your Sportsnet pick'em, I don't think they're going to do either series unless they do a game in Guelph, because they've already shown Ottawa twice.
Yeah, that's true. I
mean, I think we're running out of sexy draft picks.
They just did a bunch of Saskatoon Prince Albert games, so I'm trying to think who's hosting in the dub right now. Prince Albert's through. They're playing Edmonton. And you got Vancouver playing Spokane. Maybe they go to Vancouver for a game.
Or Edmonton.
Or Edmonton, yeah.
They already got through there.
And then in the queue, you got Halifax versus Drummondville. And,
they might go to Halifax.
And what's the other series? Rouyn-Noranda against Rimouski. I don't see them going to either of those buildings. Maybe Rimouski, but I think that's a long shot. I know, just getting off OHL for a second, though, Rouyn-Noranda, top scorer in the queue playoffs, just went down with mono. That's a brutal time to get it. You usually see that other times of the year, I find, but anyway.
Dude, it's spring. This is the time to kiss.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, they just lost their top scorer, and mono is not a 2-week deal, so anyway.
Okay, two blue bloods for the Eastern Conference. Who you got?
Oh, man, this is classic 70s-80s series.
The 96 finals.
Was it the 96 final? No, 97.
97.
And Oshawa won that in OT. I mean, hey, Oshawa, they just proved something. They're no slouches. I knew they were a solid team. Kyle Kizer is a fantastic goalie. And I know we went on about DiPietro versus Luukkonen, but Kizer versus DiPietro could be another really good goaltending matchup. And they are the two best goalies left. No offense.
I see DiPietro actually step it up during the playoffs.
And
sure.
And that's the thing. DiPietro really,
hasn't been DiPietro yet.
No. He's been good enough, but Ottawa has not been playing super high caliber opponents yet. So this will be their real first test. I think Oshawa's going to push them. Oshawa's capable of winning games against them. In the end, I can't, you know what, Oshawa fans get mad at me all you want, but I can't see Ottawa losing right now. I'm going to pick Ottawa to win this in 6 games.
I'll say Ottawa in 5, just because I don't like Oshawa.
Fair enough.
And then, I'll give them credit, though. Man, that was the team that won the Memorial Cup 4 years ago and the OHL title. They did a proper rebuild to get back this far.
Yeah, and they're
good for them.
I don't know how...
Everything's house money with them now.
Yeah, exactly. And they shouldn't be too bad next year. It's not like they went super all in this year and they're going to be bad next year, you know what I mean?
No, they'll be fine.
So, yeah, I think it could be a pretty good East final. So we'll see. Two teams with lots of championship history. Who you got? Are you going with the newbies? Are you going with, you know, is Guelph going to keep rolling?
I'm happy for you. Mm-hmm. But I'm always about a new team getting a championship. Totally. Niagara, Sudbury, and Kingston, I've always wanted to see those guys win a title. And Saginaw especially, they're the one team I've never had an issue with. I'm cheering for them. No, not to troll you. I'm cheering for Saginaw. I like them.
I get it.
But Guelph is just fucking red hot right now. And Saginaw can be off and on. And God damn, George Burnett knows what the fuck he's doing, as much as I like to complain about him, and I'm sure you do too. I will say Guelph in 6.
I foresee one of two things happening in this series. Either Guelph is going to keep that role going. Like, they're just, you know, and the fact that this could be the advantage of only having one day off. You mentioned it about Windsor's comeback in 2010, and then they just steamrolled Barrie. I could see that happening. Guelph, just, they're on right now. Suzuki is playing out of his freaking mind. He just had 13 points in his last 5 games, 20 points in the playoffs so far. And if Guelph can just get a couple of guys, you know, if Ratcliffe can get fully back on his game like he did in Game 7, and Schnarr can get back in there, he had a great round 1, not so good round 2. That, you know, Guelph could I could see Guelph winning this series, you know, I don't want to say easily, but they could win it. On the flip side of things, it wouldn't Guelph, like Niagara, and like you mentioned with Saginaw, they could have their streaky moments too. We saw it in the London series. They were crap for a couple of games.
They, to a damn good London team, in fairness.
Fair, and Saginaw's a damn good team too. And I think you could see a situation where Guelph is now just, they have that emotional and physical drain from actually pulling this off, and Saginaw just jumps on them. And the fact that Saginaw has home ice is going to help them as well. That said, I'd pick Guelph from the start. I'm obviously biased as hell. If Saginaw wins this series, I totally would cheer for them in the final.
I would hope so.
But I got to go with my guys. I'm going to say Guelph.
No shit.
I'm picking Guelph in six. And you know what?
Same.
It's funny. And last night, you know, everyone outside of London was a Storm fan. And I knew if Guelph won that everyone now would probably turn and go, okay, but we want Saginaw to win now. So,
yep.
Hey,
you got a 24-hour hold.
You know what? That's fine. I accept it, and I totally get it. Saginaw, if they beat Guelph, man, I'm all behind them, and they deserve it. And I'm super happy for their fans to finally get past round two, and we'll see what happens.
Happy Easter, everyone.
Yes, it's been, this last week's been crazy. Time to get to our guests this week, isn't it? And of course, we have to talk about the conference final. So with that in mind, we're going to go over to the Eastern Conference final and talk with one of the play-by-play voices of the Ottawa 67s on TSN 1200 in Ottawa. It's AJ Jakubek when we come back on the OHL Fanboys podcast.
23 seconds to go. Porco's got it. He'll clear it back to Davis. The crowd recognizing the effort of the Hounds, who did make it interesting here in this series. 10 seconds remaining. Hollowell up at center. 5 seconds. Wastick. Oldowski clears. For the first time in 17 years of Saginaw Spirit Hockey, the Spirit are third round bound. After a sweep of the Hounds by the Hounds last season, the Spirit bark back to beat Sault Ste. Marie in six and head to the Western Conference Final for the first time in team history.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys podcast. Our guest this week is one of the play-by-play voices for the Ottawa 67s. It's AJ Jakubek. AJ, thanks you so much for taking some time out and joining the show during this very busy time for the 67s.
Yeah, my pleasure.
It's been a heck of a season for the 67s, and we'll get into that. You know, certainly their best season in a long time. But, of course, you've been around the franchise for a long time yourself, since 2003. You know, how did you get into, you know, being a play-by-play announcer for the 67s or a radio voice, what have you? And was this kind of one of the career paths you'd always decided to take, or is this something, you know, we've heard stories about how guys fall into one of these gigs. How did it come all about for you?
Yeah, I mean, kind of a long story, but I'll try and keep it as short as possible. I mean, I, like most Canadian boys, grew up wanting to, you know, play in the National Hockey League, and made it through AAA and Junior A, Junior B, a couple of WHL camps. I'm from out west, so I ended up going to Swift Current and Kamloops camps. And I can say that I got cut in 1991 from the Kamloops Blazers, and they ended up, the core of that group won three out of the next four Memorial Cups. So I can say that, you know, maybe I would have made it if I was in a different organization, but no, I wasn't talented enough. So, well, 5'10" with no skill, that's a bad combination. So,
well, maybe do they give out cut rings for those Memorial Cups? Or
oh, I've got somewhere in some box somewhere, I've got a Blazers practice jersey somewhere. So that and a cup of coffee will cost you a couple of bucks either way. I think, for me, I always just wanted to work in sports, and, you know, I wanted to play. I coached for 4 years, you know, in Alberta and BC, and, you know, just basically from the time I was a teenager, thought, well, if I don't make it as a player or a coach, then, you know, maybe broadcaster would be something that would be cool too. So I ended up going to Nate in Edmonton. That's where I grew up. Took the radio and television program there and just kind of worked my way from city to city, from Melfort, Saskatchewan to Trail, BC to Edmonton. And then in 2003, got what was my big break in broadcasting, getting the opportunity to move to Ottawa to become at that time one of the Ottawa 67's voices, along with the legendary voice, Dave Schreiber, who was also doing Ottawa Renegades and Ottawa Senators games at the time. So whenever he was busy with a conflict with the Renegades or the Senators, then I would do play-by-play. And if he was available to do 67s, then I would do color alongside him. And it's kind of, come full circle. Here I am 16 years later, and, I work on some Senators broadcasts and do the CFL games, do the Red Blacks games, and now Kenny Walls has kind of taken the mantle as the guy who's there for every game and does such a great job for us. And he called, over half of the regular season games, and I called about 20-some, and now, we're working together here in the playoffs. So kind of brings back memories in particular to 05 when, this team ended up going to the Memorial Cup and losing in the semifinals to Rimouski with that great London team that won it all. But we'll see. We'll see with the 67s if they can get there again this year in Halifax. But it's been a fun ride. I mean, I'm glad, just going back to kind of those old days, I'm just glad that I was able to be here in 03, and in particular those first 4 years, because in 07 I moved back to Edmonton for 3 years to do the first 3 years of the Edmonton Oil Kings. But, my first 4 years, I got to experience Brian Kilray and his entourage, and everyone was there. I mean, Killer had his coaches, and he had his people that brought on the beer, and his people that did various jobs. There was Tank, there was Stump, there was Bobby, there was Smitty, there was, everyone imaginable, along with, of course, his coaching staff and his trainers and whatever. So those were the good old days. You're not going to see any other teams bringing multiple cases of Molson X onto a bus anymore. You're not going to smell cigar smoke anymore. It's a different time, and that's a good thing, but I truly cherish those early years with the 67s where I got to hang out with Killer and hear all his stories and drink his beer and smell the cigar smoke. Those were legendary times, to be sure.
Well, and of course you joined up with the team, 2003, that's right in the middle of some good years for the 67s, really their last bunch of good years in a row. Of course, they had just won a Memorial Cup a few years before, an OHL title in 01. 2003, they went to the OHL final against Kitchener, and you're kind of were thrown into the fire with watching some great players like Corey Locke and Matt Foy, and the stories I've heard about those guys. It was a good time to be a 67s fan, of course, and then, as you mentioned, the run in 05.
Yeah, for sure. I missed Matt Foy by a year because I started 03, 04.
Ah.
So I missed the 02, 03 team where Corey Locke and Matt Foy lit up the league together and went to the league final before losing to Kitchener. But I started the next year and Corey Locke was still on the team and scored, 50 goals. So, I think, for me, the highlight, the reality is in that time, Ottawa's had some good teams, but, in this time, it hasn't been kind of the same as, say, the run for 15 years between the 80s and 2001, for example, or 2003. Like, they made the Memorial Cup in 05, albeit as league finalists, because London was the host and ended up winning the league. But the only other time they've reached the conference final, between 2003 and now was 2012, with, the teams with Tyler Toffoli, Cody Ceci, Sean Monahan, Tyler Graevac, Shane Prince, Peter Mrazek, and they ended up losing to Niagara in the conference finals that year. So, there's been some really good teams for sure. And especially I cherish that run to the Memorial Cup in 2005, Danny Battaccio standing on his head. I mean, in all the hockey I've witnessed, I've seen goalies steal games. I haven't seen a goalie stand on his head for 2.5 months straight, like Danny Battaccio did in 2005 and pulling that team forward, upset wins 3 rounds in a row over Barrie, Sudbury, and Peterborough before finally falling in five games to the London Knights in the OHL final. So that was a great group, a lot of characters on that team, some good players. Yeah, that was a terrific run and real fun to be a part of. And for me, it's just great seeing the crowds again and seeing the interest again in 67s hockey, because when I moved to Ottawa, I mean, the 67s were a big deal, and as they should. I mean, one of the more, you know, even as a guy who grew up out west, when you think about kind of the franchises that are the storybook franchises of the Ontario Hockey League, I mean, you think of, yeah, the Oshawa Generals and the London Knights and the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds and the Kitchener Rangers, but the Ottawa 67s, and in particular with those barber pole uniforms, those classic unis, always kind of one of the great teams of junior hockey. So to come here in 03 to experience the crowds, which at that time were tops in the CHL, they were getting over 9,000 a game. You know, it was a special time to be here. And then, you know, since that time, it's, you know, the fan base has slowly eroded. You know, crowds have been lower basically every year from 05 as you know, just the fact that, you know, you're not always going to get 9,000 a game. You've got the Ottawa Senators in town, but in particular what happened in 2012 when the 67s moved because of the renovations to the Civic Center and, you know, Lansdowne Park and Frank Clair Stadium. Now it's all called TD Place. When that all took place, they got booted out to Canadian Tire Center for 2 years. Their fan base dwindled, and they had bad teams for 2 years. And when they came back in 2014, all of a sudden, you know, maybe people that got used to going to 67 games on Friday and Sunday found other things to do. Plus, you had a more crowded sports market. You had the Ottawa Redblacks, and they've been so successful in the last 5 years. You brought in a professional soccer team with the Ottawa Fury. So, you know, the last couple of years, for example, you look at crowds, and they're midweek crowds. It's always easier when you have home ice advantage and you get those prime dates, the Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays. But still, they're getting 1,800, 2,000 a game the last couple of years in the playoffs. And, you know, a lot of crowds during the regular season were even lower than that over the last few years. So it was disappointing, even disheartening to see just how that fan base had eroded. And now to see it come back slowly, you know, towards the second half of this season where excitement has started to generate because it's been such a good season for the team. But not only that, I think they've realized they needed to market differently and bring in people in a different way, not just market to families, which, yeah, you've always got to market to families and try and get hockey teams to come and that sort of thing. But, you know, try and get that, you know, that 35-year-old person that's single and maybe just wants to come and have a couple of beers with his buddies on a Friday night. So $20 for a Friday ticket and a beer, which is one of the promotions they brought in this year. I mean, you know, I think that's one of the things that has helped. And, you know, they're just trying to do different things. They had an office night, which generated a lot of interest because of the interest in the show The Office. They had a 90s game, you know, basically having all these different 90s type things that occurred. I mean, that's what you have to do, especially in a market like Ottawa. And, you know, slowly the fans have started to come back. And in the playoffs, the atmosphere has been terrific. Some of the best crowds I've seen since, you know, a decade ago. So it's great to see. And we'll see if they can keep things going from that perspective. Certainly the crowds are going to be, you know, even better starting in the conference finals and the rest of the season. They're going to be fantastic. But, you know, hopefully the long-lasting legacy of this is that 67's hockey truly is back in Ottawa and that fans will come out on a more regular basis in the regular season, because it makes a big difference. I think it's good to have a strong, healthy Ottawa in the league. You know, much like having imagine London getting 2,000 a game, right? I mean, you know, a lot of people like to laugh at the Knights, and I'm sure there are a lot of people kind of laughing at the way that they lost out to the Guelph Storm after a 3-0 series lead. There's some people with not a lot of love lost for the Knights for the way they've handled some things over the past couple of decades. But the reality is junior hockey's better when the London Knights are strong. Junior hockey's better when the Ottawa 67s are strong. And certainly you could say the same thing about Oshawa and Windsor and the Sioux and just some of the more traditional franchises. So hopefully, again, this leads to a healthier bottom line for everyone going forward.
You talk about that healthier bottom line just with all sports in Ottawa, except maybe that one, that biggest team right now. Of course, it's been pretty public on what the Ottawa the Ottawa Senators have been up to, and a lot of people not happy with the way that organization has been going. And it, really, it's the one organization that's not connected to the whole Lansdowne area as far as sports goes in Ottawa. I'd imagine the 67s, you know, while I'm sure the organization wouldn't wish any ill will towards the Senators, the fact that everything's happening with the Senators that is happening with them right now, it's probably bodes a little bit better for the 67s, because those disgruntled hockey fans who aren't happy with the product out in Kanata might go, hey, let's go downtown and see a 67s game, because they're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, first and foremost, I know there's a lot of people that work at OSEG, Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group, that, you know, grew up in Ottawa and they're Senators fans, and they attend Senators games. And the last thing that they want is to see the Senators, fail off the ice or leave town or something like that. Not that I think they're in danger of doing so, but they want the Ottawa Senators here and to be healthy. And, you know, I think everyone benefits. I think when you go to a sporting event and you have a good time and you enjoy it, doesn't matter what sporting event you go to, you're going to want to go to more sporting events. That's the reality. And if you're not enjoying sports, maybe you just stay home in general. So I think the good news for Ottawa is, because they've been good, I mean, if Ottawa wasn't good this year, and if they didn't do some things to, again, some of the things I talked about to help attract different people to come, the people that are disgruntled Senators fans would just stay home anyways. So they still had to work to go get those people, and now they have to work to attract those people to want to come back. And I think, you know, that's really important for the 67s, and I think they've done a pretty good job of that, and I think fans will be back. But, you know, no question, hey, bottom line, if the Ottawa Senators were in the playoffs right now and all of a sudden you've got nights where both teams are playing, hey, you're not gonna knock that king off its perch. If the Senators are in the playoffs opposite a 67s playoff game, it's going to be tougher to sell seats, just because whether it's a home game or a road game, a lot of people are going to want to watch that game, and it certainly affects the crowd. But you know, the fact that they're not in, I think you know, certainly leads a lot of people to want to come. And when people have come, they realize, A, hey, you know what? I love junior hockey. B, I like watching this team. It's a real good team to watch. And I think they know that, that this is a team that has a legitimate chance to win a championship here. They're halfway there already, and they really haven't faced a ton of adversity here in the playoffs. So no doubt they're going to get some fans because of that. I mean, Lyndon Sluage, who used to do the national anthem for most big games at Canadian Tire Center, they basically had, I don't want to say it was a falling out, but I think, you know, the Senators went in a different direction, kind of a contract dispute or something along those lines. So Lyndon Sluage doesn't do the anthem at 10 games anymore, and he's doing the anthem tomorrow night. So I'm sure that'll kind of raise the roof off of game one against the Generals tomorrow. So, you know, those are the types of the things that I don't think they're doing it, you know, from an animosity standpoint. They're doing it because, hey, why not bring in someone like Lyndon Sluage, who the fans can identify with and will fire up the crowd. And so those are the types of things that I think you're seeing right now. And that, you know, I just like the fact that you can talk Ottawa 67 hockey on the radio and people don't want you to change the subject back to the Sens. That to me is exciting. And I think it's just great to see that, that the interest is back in this team.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, someone like a Lyndon Sluage doing an anthem. I mean, you know, not to knock the kids who do it all year with school programs and whatnot, but I know as a fan myself, you get a little bit more pumped for someone like that who can really belt out an anthem as opposed to, you know, a bunch of kindergarten kids.
Yeah, and you know what? Some of them are fantastic as well. But again, it's just the whole, and you know, speaking of the OHL connection, he's a Sault Ste. Marie guy and used to do the anthem at the Greyhounds games. But this is the guy that, you know, a lot of people in Ottawa identify with. When you think of all the big Senators games and playoff games, who was the one belting out the anthem? And, you know, in no other sport is it really a big deal. I mean, you know, other than the Super Bowl, it's not like they have coverage of the anthem in the NFL. I mean, there's been coverage the last couple of years for different reasons, but those are more political reasons. NBA, Major League Baseball, it's changed a little bit with the, you know, God Bless America, late in games, you know, since 9/11. But beyond that, I mean, when do you ever hear the anthem before a game other than the NHL and the Stanley Cup playoffs and Rennie Rancourt and Bob Lorio and going back to Kate Smith in Philadelphia and all the different great anthem singers. And Lyndon Sluage, he's that guy for Ottawa. So, again, any little edge that you can get, and I think they'll probably, you know, it's going to be, I don't know if it's going to be a sellout for game one, but, you know, it's certainly trending towards that. And, you know, I can just imagine the atmosphere that's going to take place at TD Place with him coming out. I think that's going to get a lot of people off their feet right off the bat.
Yeah, and I'd imagine, you know, facing the Oshawa Generals, you're going to have a lot of Jennies fans coming up there for what this is a pretty classic rivalry. This feels like a good old 80s, 90s matchup in the old East Division of the OHL. We'll get to the Eastern Conference Final and of course, your thoughts on this upcoming series, but want to just quickly touch on Ottawa's road through the playoffs so far. As you mentioned, not really any big adversity. They're the only team to go 8-0 through the first two rounds. They beat Hamilton in the first round, of course, which was a rematch of last year's first round. Things obviously a bit much different dynamic this year. And, of course, the Sudbury Wolves, who I think people thought Sudbury might have been able to steal a game or two against the 67s there. But at the end of the day, I don't think anyone's too surprised that Ottawa came out on top there. What was your thoughts through these first two series, you know, on how these teams played Ottawa, how Ottawa played them, and really if they did face any sort of adversity before that triple overtime game, which I'm sure we could talk about that on its own.
Yeah, not a lot of adversity, to be honest. I didn't expect much of a test in round one. I mean, you know, last year was the reverse, right? A young Ottawa team facing a very talented Bulldogs team. You know, that team had nothing but 19 and 20-year-old defensemen, and Ottawa's team had none. And so fast forward a year, and, you know, none of the top six defensemen that Hamilton dressed in that playoff series a year ago was on the team this year, and, you know, Ottawa returned everyone. So they did make the Carter Robertson trade, but beyond that, it's the same blue line. So, you know, just two teams at different phases of their cycle right now. Hamilton, I think, has done a great job in their organization with Steve Staios, and the fact that they're even able to make the playoffs with all the losses that they suffered from last year is a testament to the job that they've done. But, you know, they were really never in Ottawa's league in that series. You know, they had a 2-1 lead. The only time Ottawa trailed, actually up until game four of the Sudbury series, was at the midway point of the second period. They were down 2-1. In game one and came back to win that game 9-3. So, I mean, I guess that could be deemed a little bit of adversity, but beyond that, it was smooth sailing against Hamilton and probably a lot easier than a lot of people expected against Sudbury, winning 8-5, 5-0 and 8-5 in the first three games. You know, the Wolves certainly played their best game in game four, a classic, as you said, the fifth longest game in OHL history and the longest in 67's history. And, you know, but beyond that, Ottawa was clearly the better team. This is a team that there's not a lot of weaknesses. They've got a great coaching staff. And they, you know, credit Oseg for giving this group all the resources that they need. It's not just about who they have with their coaching staff and their management group with, you know, you've got James Boyd, Jan Eggert, and the scouts. You've got Andre Tourney, Mario Duhamel, Norm Milley, and, of course, video coach Andrew Boucher. It goes beyond that. It's about strength and conditioning coach Sean Young. It's about goaltending coach Charlie McTavish and goaltending consultant Freddie Brathwaite and skills coach Derek Miller. I mean, there's so many different coaches that they've got with this group. They spent the money, they've got the resources, and, you know, I think it's paid dividends. So they've got a great staff. They've got two great goalies. I mean, you got Cedric Andre, who had a terrific season and would be a number one on, you know, most teams in the league, and was certainly a competent number one for the 67s. But, you know, that was one of the things. He had one win prior to this year. So when you've got an opportunity to go out and get somebody who's one of the best goalies in junior hockey, who's won a Memorial Cup, who played in, you know, a World Juniors for Team Canada, has been through kind of the pressure cooker, as good as Cedric Andre has been, hey, he's going to be the guy the next couple of years. Why not go out and get a Mikey DiPietro? So you're set in goal. As I mentioned, you got all those returning defensemen, and that's kind of an underrated part of this team, is just, you know, the blue line. While there's not a star in the group, maybe not an Evan Bouchard or a Sam Marukov, you just got six really solid defensemen, some physical guys as well, in Kevin Ball and Hudson Wilson and Merrick Rippon and Nikita Hutchuk, and, I mean, Noel Hoffenmeyer and the offense he provides. Lucas Perrick's still a young guy. He's the number six. We certainly saw that in particular in the overtime game against Sudbury, where he didn't play a lot. But, you know, the other five log a lot of minutes, and, you know, this is a real strong blue line. And then up front, you know, I liken it to kind of a murderer's row in baseball, much like the Blue Jays when they were in the playoffs, you know, with those teams a few years back, where there's really no break in the order. You've got 11 guys that had at least a half a point a game, and so you can roll four lines. And the first three lines in particular are like, I talked about this on the radio today. When they went to the Memorial Cup in 2005, they had three balanced lines. It was kind of like three second lines with Chris Hewlett, Julian Talbot, and Jamie McGinn. They had Mark Mancari with Brad Modello and Brian Bickell, with Bonello in the middle, and then Jeremy Akeson with the two Czechs and Jacob Petrozalek and Lukasz Kaspar. Those were three really good, really balanced lines, and so you weren't sure. You didn't have really one line to check, but I'd say those were three second lines. Now with Ottawa this year, they've got three first lines. Their best line in the playoffs is a line that's listed typically number three, but I think it's their best line, and that's Mitch Holscher, the Devils prospect, in between the two overagers in Lucas Chiodo and Kyle Maximovich, and the experience that those guys have brought from playoffs past from Barrie and Erie respectively has helped immensely with this group, especially since they hadn't won a playoff series since 2012. Then you've got, I mean, a line with Sasha Chmielewski, Austin Keating, and Graham Clark, and then Ty Felliber, who only scored 50 goals in 47 games and finished with 59, didn't score a goal in the first round of the playoffs. Well, that didn't matter because you got other people picking up the slack. You know, playing on a line with Marco Rossi and also Cody Clark. So, and Sam Bitten and you know, Jack Quinn are guys that can move up the lineup easily. I mean, Quinn Ewell is the only forward that didn't have half a point a game, and he's still a solid veteran that can penalty kill and a good two-way guy. So this is just such a deep group that I'd be very surprised if they lost to the Oshawa Generals. You know, I don't want to look ahead to the OHL final quite yet because, hey, there's four teams left and you've got to win some games. But I think an Ottawa-Saginaw-Ottawa Guelph series, then I'd say, okay, you know what? There is a potential to lose, especially to a Guelph team that is so loaded, has found their way, got through some adversity. You know, they had 15 guys at 10 NHL camps, which is just unheard of, and have just tremendous potential with that group. But, you know, so could I see them lose to Saginaw? Could I see them lose to Guelph? I could. I think both would be great series. And I'd still pick Ottawa, not just because of heart, but just because of all the things that I mentioned, and in particular because of goaltending. And I think that might be the great equalizer. But I can certainly see any of those three teams winning the league at this stage. I'd be stunned if Oshawa does it. Oshawa's a good team. They're big. They play hard. You know, they're going to give – this is not going to be a sweep. They're going to give the 67s more of a test than I think they had in the first couple of rounds. But, you know, I still think they're just not at that level. And you know, I saw four 67s Generals games in the second half of the year. And to me, the one that really kind of signified, you know, that this is an Ottawa team that means business – The 67s had a lengthy winning streak ended by Oshawa at home on national television in overtime. And then they came back the next day in Oshawa. The Generals didn't even bring Kyle Kizer to Ottawa. They left him back in Oshawa to rest for that Sunday game. And the 67s were on the 401 for over 6 hours. And it was a long bus ride. They got there a half hour before what would have been the game. And I've had that experience multiple times before. And generally, it doesn't go well for the team. Well, they went there, got on the ice, went in for warm-up, got into the game and dominated and won 4-0 and just took care of business. And that's where I kind of thought, you know what, this was a team that was making a true statement here today. And that's where I thought this team's going to be very tough to beat in a 7-game series in the playoffs. So I think, like I said, I think Oshawa will give them a test this round, but I'm still picking the 67s to win it. And you know, I think the one concern I would have in terms of everything I said, you talk about adversity. What happens when this team is punched in the mouth? You know, we saw it with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and that's not a junior hockey team. That's an NHL team. And when they got punched in the mouth by Columbus, they basically looked dazed, looked like a deer in the headlights and didn't know what to do and ended up getting swept in four straight. I saw it with the Calgary Hitmen a few years back. They had a team that finished with 120-some points in the Western Hockey League back in 2009. They swept everyone in the Eastern Conference, won their first 12 games, got to the final. A Tyler Myers-led Kelowna team that finished probably 40 points back of them in the overall standings, they won the first three games of the series. And Calgary kind of just didn't know what hit them. They ended up winning the next two games, but lost in overtime in game six in Kelowna, and the Rockets represented the WHL at the Memorial Cup. So strange things can happen, and we'll see what happens when Ottawa is going to face adversity, because it's definitely going to come in the next two rounds. But I believe it's probably more likely to come in a serious way in the OHL final, assuming they get there, instead of this round against the Oshawa Generals.
I'd imagine, you know, I'm not out of line by saying that a lot of people expected this series, you know, and with all due respect to the Oshawa Generals, who have a very solid hockey club there, most people were expecting this to be Ottawa-Niagara for most of the year. How's, you know, and I'd imagine you were preparing as a broadcaster, especially once Ottawa swept Sudbury, and of course Niagara got up 2-0 on Oshawa pretty quickly there. I'd imagine you were preparing for an Ottawa-Niagara series. Were you surprised, as many other people were, that Niagara was not able to beat the Oshawa Generals in a 7-game series?
No, I picked Niagara. I'm 11 for 12 in my prediction in the playoffs, and it certainly wasn't looking very good when Guelph was down 3-0, because I picked Guelph to win the West right from the outset and play Ottawa in the league final. But that's the one I missed. I had Niagara beating Oshawa. I'm not going to say stunned or anything like that. You know, in terms of what Kenny Walls, for example, who saw Niagara a lot more than I did over the course of the season. I only saw them play once against the 67s. They seemed like, you know, and especially, you know, to people that watch that team a lot more, seemed like a team that was kind of, you know, their individual parts were better than kind of the whole. So, you know, that ends up biting you in the rear end in the end, and they're going home. For me, I was hoping for Niagara, mainly because, you know, as an Edmonton guy, you kind of think, okay, you know, since the glory years, who's the one team that the Oilers couldn't get over the hump against in the playoffs? I mean, back when they used to actually get into the playoffs, 12 to 13 years is a pretty ugly stat, but yeah. I digress. It's the Dallas Stars, and they won that first series in 1997 and then just couldn't beat them the rest of the late 90s and early 2000s. And for the Ottawa 67s, that's been Niagara. I mean, they ended Brian Kilray's coaching career in overtime in game seven. Ottawa did get the best of them the year after that in 2010. But the last three times, mentioned 2012 in the conference final, and then in 15 and 16 as well. It's been Niagara. So they've won four or five playoff series in the last decade. And so for me personally, I was hoping for Niagara. I was hoping the 67s could finally get over that hump. But nonetheless, it's not Niagara, so that means less travel, and, you know, I'm okay with that too.
As you say, you never want to look past a team like Oshawa, especially a series that's with the magnitude of a conference final. But we got you here anyway, so we're going to ask you, you know, the potential final opponents for Ottawa for the OHL Championship would be either be the Saginaw Spirit or the Guelph Storm. You know, what would your thoughts be on either of those matchups for Ottawa this year? Of course, Ottawa took both their games against Saginaw this year, won by a very lopsided 8-2 score. They split against the Guelph Storm, with the home teams winning both games. Guelph actually technically wins the season series, taking 3 of 4 points. You know, is there a team, as someone who I'm sure is supporting the 67s, who would you rather see? And what do you think, which team would give Ottawa the biggest test?
I think they both give Ottawa a real test. I truly believe that. The Saginaw game that I did in the second half of the season was lopsided in Ottawa's favor, but, you know, that can happen to anyone in junior hockey. In fact, Guelph blew out Ottawa at the end of a 3-3 right after the trade deadline, right after they had played Sarnia and London. So I don't like to judge too much on, you know, one game. And certainly Saginaw had a real good team before the deadline, and you go out and get guys like Ryan McLeod, Nolan Tippett, and, you know, certainly that would be a very formidable opponent. I will say this about Guelph. The game in Ottawa that they played at, that is probably the best regular season junior hockey game I've ever done. And, yeah. And you know, I've been broadcasting junior hockey since the 2000-2001 season back in Kelowna with the Rockets, major junior, not to mention junior A for a time before that as well. So I've been around. I've seen a lot of junior hockey. And if it is Ottawa-Guelph, and I'm sure I could say the same thing about Ottawa-Saginaw, but having witnessed that game in Ottawa, that was a whale of a hockey game. That's as good as it gets to see, you know, just the speed, the skill, the intensity and physicality that would be on display. That would be a credit to junior hockey. And if either of those series happens, it's going to be great. But in particular, if it happens to be Ottawa-Guelph, fans are in for a treat.
And I'm sure someone as yourself who rides the buses would appreciate the about 4 less hours that it would take to get to Guelph than Saginaw.
You know what? Saginaw is actually one of my favorite cities in the OHL. And nothing against Guelph. I like Guelph. But Saginaw, I've always had – I haven't been to Saginaw in a few years, maybe 4 years, I think. Because, again, they always go there early in the season, and I don't do any games until at the earliest after Grey Cup. And so it's been a while since I've been there, but I've always loved my visits there. So you hope at that point that maybe they might fly. I know they flew to Plymouth, for example, when they played them in the 0-1 finals. I know we flew at various points in the 0-5 finals as well. Well, in the 0-5 playoffs to, you know, even within the conference. So, you know, it's one thing if you're talking 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, but when you're talking about 10 hours, you wonder if, you know, that'll be a part of it. I know the Western Hockey League, you know, the league charters, and they have to, you know, you can't have Portland and Brandon busing like they used to in the old days, but now they use the same charter. Now the teams are on the same charter. So when Edmonton and Portland, for example, are playing each other, you know, there's one team in the back and another team in the front, and they fly. And that's the way it should be because, you know, hey, you get this far, why not, you know, have the league spend a little bit more money to ensure that you've got, not only a good final, but a rested team once you get to the Memorial Cup. That's what it's all about. So we'll see if it comes to that. Obviously, you don't have to worry about that when it's London, Niagara, or something along those lines. But if it is Ottawa, Saginaw, that's something that probably needs to be considered by the league.
Looking even farther ahead for Ottawa, almost, you know, forgetting what's left this season, the Ottawa 67s have set themselves up really good. Of course, they went out and got some major pieces at the deadline, they, as we saw, you know, they didn't have to give up any roster players. Yes, picks were spent, but Ottawa had a ton of picks to give up anyway, and they still have a lot. They've set themselves up pretty good to be really in this same position next year, don't they?
Yeah, they're going to be real good next year. And I think the important thing is with all their picks that they've got, and credit Jeff Brown for that. Number one, the Travis Konecny trade. He had great foresight. Wasn't necessarily the most popular trade with, you know, at that time, a dwindling fan base. And, you know, I'm sure there are even some people within the organization that were wondering, why are we trading Travis Konecny? We haven't won a playoff series since 2012. But, you know, I think he thought there was a chance that Konecny might not make it back as a 19-year-old. And in the end, he ended up, you know, making the Philadelphia Flyers at 19. So to get the amount of picks that they got, plus Sasha Chmielewski, set this organization up for a long time. And, you know, that way when they went out and made the trades that they did, you know, they didn't have to empty the cupboards like, say, a Niagara did, where Niagara doesn't have a second-round pick until, what, 2026 now. I mean, that's just insane. So from an Ottawa perspective, you've got all your picks. You've already signed four guys from this draft and two second-rounders in that group, a first-rounder and a third-rounder. So you got 11 players from this year's draft that are going to the Gold Cup. That's more than any other team. I know they had a real high rating from scout.ca. So this is a team that I think not only are they set up good for next year, because, you know, right now, you know, Noel Hoffenmeyer is maybe the only possibility. I talked about the blue line and how young it was a couple of years ago and how they've got six returning guys playing right now. Well, probably the only guy they lose is Noel Hoffenmeyer, but he's still unsigned by Arizona as well. So there's no guarantee that he's not going to be back next year. I think he'll be a pro in the end, but still, you bring back your other five defensemen. You bring back Cedric Andre and Will Cranley in goal. You bring in some of the other young guys that you brought along, and they've got some real good young players in the organization that played some games this year, the Matt Maggios of the world and the Yannick Crates and so on and so forth. Alec Bélanger, Cam Poulin. I mean, poor Cam Poulin, a sixth overall pick, can't get into the lineup. He plays two games in round one because Kyle Maksimovich is suspended and scores a goal. Had a game late in the season where he was a star on our broadcast, had a couple of points, and, you know, the next game he's a healthy scratch. And that's the way it is, right? I mean, who else are you going to take out of the lineup? You know, mentioning earlier the 11 guys that have half a point a game or more. I mean, who are you going to take out of that group? Or Quinn Ewell? It's just not going to happen. So he waits his turn. All these young kids wait their turn. But, you know, they're going to be real good next year as well. I think they're going to be a real threat to, you know, be a contender to win the league next season. And then beyond that, as long as this, you know, as long as they don't sell the farm and they keep, you know, keep a lot of their picks and, you know, some of these young guys pan out, this to me looks like one of those rare instances where, you know, that maybe for a handful of years, it's not cyclical. It's just going to be a team that kind of reloads every year for, you know, a 4, 5, 6 year period, which is so rare in junior hockey these days. But, you know, that's what Jeff Brown started, and that's what this group has followed up on. They didn't go out and sell the farm because they didn't need to. They had, you know, probably a better team than even they expected this year at the deadline. So why get rid of guys who were a big part of that? They added to that. They didn't get rid of any roster players at the deadline. And, you know, now they're set up, like I said, for a long time. So that's why I think from a 67's perspective off the ice, I think it's great news, because when you want to build on something like this, when you want to have some momentum off the ice and get back to those days, you don't want to just be one and done and then have a bad team next year. If you're good for 3, 4, 5 years, you can build something crowd-wise again and get to – a point where maybe you are averaging 5, 6, 7,000 a game again, like they were a few years back.
Well, we definitely have seen it in the OHL in recent years. You know, Sault Ste. Marie has had several good years that are continuing, and Erie had four straight 50-win seasons, and we all know what the London Knights are. So could definitely be a possibility for Ottawa over the course of the next few years, and a franchise that deserves, a fan base that deserves it after some of the years they've had over the past decade. AJ, we thank you so much for your insight and your stories on the Ottawa 67s and your time in the booth, and we wish you guys and the best of luck for Ottawa in the conference final.
Yeah, my pleasure. Cheers, Steve.
That's AJ Jakubek, the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa 67s on TSN 1200 in Ottawa. You can also hear him in the fall doing the Red Blacks games. He does the Fury. A man of many voices for the community of Ottawa. When we come back, we wrap up this week's episode of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
19 seconds left. Draw one by Jones. Jones to Robertson. Robertson off the stick of Noel. Batted ahead by Mattinen. Dillon's out of the net. Jones swarmed. Stolen by Newman. He shoots, missed the net. It bounces in front of Brassard. Brassard clears it up. Here's Jones. Jones to Robertson. Sending a slap shot, missed the net. The Generals win! Victory on Athol Street. The Oshawa Generals eliminate the Niagara Ice Dogs. And for the first time since 2015, the Generals are off to the conference finals.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast. As we wrap up this week's episode, I'd really like to thank once again AJ Jakubek, the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa 67s on TSN 1200, for coming on the show and giving us a big conference final preview between the 67s and the Generals. Of course, his thoughts on the Western Conference teams as well, Saginaw and Guelph. So thank him very much. Of course, you can follow the OHL Fanboys Podcast on Twitter at OHL Fanboys, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes and on Spotify. Of course, Brian is on Twitter at Toast84, and I'm on Twitter at SteveMcLean888. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank God Guelph came back and they won Game 7. Oh, I'm so happy about that. Until next week, for Brian Thompson, I am Steve McLean. So long, everybody.
You've been listening to the OHL Fanboys Podcast.